Sunday night's main event is brought to you by Vape Nation, your premier provider of electronic cigarettes and e-liquids in Southern Ontario. For locations, visit vapenationcanada.com.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
The shakeup is over, so let the wild card begin. We're only 1 week away from going to the bank, and AEW looks to be Turner bound. It's TNT, and they're dynamite. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event, made possible with the help of Vape Nation, taking your vape shop experience to the next level. Visit vapenationcanada.com for locations. Jason Agnew here for another week of wrestling-fueled frustration. And this week, I'll be joined by a plethora of guests, including Todd Martin and Jimmy Corderas in the Triple Threat, Dan the Mouth Abranski for a six-pack challenge, Dave Meltzer for the Wrestling Observer Insider, and last but not least, the man who helped train Edge, Christian, Trish Stratus, Gail Kim, and many, many more, Ron Hutchison. Ron has a new book out called Pain, Torture, Agony, telling tales of both his wrestling career and as trainer to many future champions. He'll tell us all about it later in tonight's show. Plus, I've also got a Mother's Day edition of Turnbuckle Trivia and your feedback. It's all coming at you, but first gonna take a break only to come back and get you updated on a very packed week of wrestling news. You're listening to Sunday night's main event.
Vape Nation Canada, your premier provider of electronic cigarettes and e-liquids in Southern Ontario. In downtown Burlington, corner of Elizabeth Street and Pine. In Stony Creek, at the corner of Paramount and Mud. In Brantford, at 320 Colborne Street West in the Sobeys Plaza. In Oakville, at Lakeshore Road West and Bronte Road. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 till 9, Sunday, 11 till 6. Better prices, selection, service, and atmosphere. Raise your expectations. You can have it all. Vape Nation, taking the vape shop experience to the next level. VapeNationCanada.com.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. And unfortunately, we have to start the news pack this week with some sad news as Cesar Barón, better known in the wrestling world as Silver King, passed away on Saturday night during the course of a match in London, England at the age of 51. Yeah, this was during the course of a match. You heard me correctly. He was wrestling Juventud Guerrera for the Lucha Libre World Promotion in London and suffered what is speculated to be a heart attack during the match right before what looked to be the finish. Silver King had hit Juventud with a flying clothesline during the match and then went for a cover. He quickly became unresponsive after these actions. There was a clear confusion from both Juve and the referee at this point, and they even eerily counted the three count, not knowing what to do. According to those in the arena, the rest of the show was canceled. We'll get the latest developments on the story later in the show from Dave Meltzer. Of course, many of you may remember Silver King from a run in WCW in 1997. He comes from a wrestling family as he was the son of lucha star Dr. Wagner. Well, one of the top stories this week feels like speculation on speculation of expectation and involves the highly anticipated TV deal for All Elite Wrestling. It could be happening this week, friends. The Wrap reported earlier this week that the current plan is for AEW and Warner Media to announce a partnership 1 hour before Warner Media's television upfronts on May the 15th. That is this Wednesday, which are going to be held at Madison Square Garden. Now, according to the report, AEW will be airing a weekly television show on TNT starting this fall. President Tony Khan and other wrestlers will reportedly be at the event as well, pitching to media buyers. There were also more talent signings for AEW this week, with Jerry Lynn being added as an agent. Former three-time AAA Tag Team Champions Angelico and Evans are on board, as is referee Rick Knox. And if you'd like to see all those gentlemen and you happen to live in the UK, AEW announced broadcast details for the Double or Nothing show. The main card will air as a pay-per-view on ITV Box Office at 1 a.m. local time on Saturday night / Sunday morning. There will also be an hour-long free show called Buy In that will air for free on ITV4. AEW has yet to officially announce broadcast details for Double or Nothing and Buy In in the United States, though Double or Nothing has already been listed as a pay-per-view on some cable systems. Now, I'm not saying I can predict the future, but less than 48 hours, I asked Dave Meltzer about why no one has latched on to signing Kevin Von Erich's sons Ross and Marshall. MLW announced they had signed the boys to contracts. The boys will make their debut at the company at the June 1st TV tapings. Now, apparently, the two had turned down an offer to try out for WWE as they wish to remain closer to their father, who currently resides in Hawaii. The contract will still allow them to work in Israel and in Pro Wrestling NOAH. Also signing with MLW is Austin Aries. It was revealed on last week's episode of Fusion that Aries will be coming to the company soon. No more details have been released as of yet. Old messages made by Lars Sullivan on a bodybuilding forum went viral once again this week. The comments contained what could be considered racist and homophobic messages, as well as making remarks directed towards Bobby Lashley and Steve Austin. Lars issued the following statement about the comments. There is no excuse for the inappropriate remarks that I made years ago. They do not reflect personal beliefs, nor who I am today, and I apologize to anyone I offended. Now, if you'll remember, these remarks had popped up a few months ago, and the WWE shelved them and pushed them away, so we'll follow along with this story and see if it affects Lars's push. In an interview, Rhino said that the WWE offered to double his current downside, but he turned it down. His last day for the WWE will be on July 17th. He plans on working in the independent scene once his contract expires, and in the interview said he does not have a no-compete period. Rhino 2.0, a.k.a. the man formerly known as Ryback, is back in the news after he posted a legal letter where WWE demanded he transfer his social media accounts and domain name that use their Ryback, the big guy, and Feed Me More trademarks. He wrote the following, quote, "This is just one document from at WWE where they tried to threaten me to hand over," which is in capitals, "all my social media accounts that I created. I have spoke the truth 100% on everything and have no reason to lie. Why would a multi-billion dollar company need my social media, you ask? Hashtag power." And that's the end of that overly dramatic quote from Ryback. Have we missed him? I have not. Despite WWE announcing NXT TakeOver 25 on June 1st, one person you will not be seeing on that show is Dominik Dijakovic. This past Tuesday, he underwent surgery for a torn meniscus, so he'll be out for a while. Percy Watson is also going to be out, well, permanently. Percy Watson has left WWE to pursue other interests. Apparently, he wanted to go into acting. Now, if you enjoy WWE propaganda, a special called Creation and Destruction, Triple H's Road to WrestleMania, will premiere on the WWE Network after NXT TakeOver 25 on Saturday, June the 1st. Along with that, there is another more interesting bit from WWE that's going to be airing on the network tomorrow after Raw, and it will be the long-lost Bret Hart versus Tom McGee match. Yeah, so for those of you that don't know about this, this was a match that was considered lost, but there was a tape found of it, and the reason why this match is so prominent in wrestling legend is because after watching this match, Pat Patterson and Vince McMahon thought Tom McGee was going to be Hulk Hogan's replacement. So for the whole story, or at least the WWE version of the story, tune in tomorrow night after Raw and you can check out a special called The Holy Grail, the search for WWE's most infamous lost match. This was actually found in Bret Hart's tape collection, and that's why it made its way back to WWE. Dave Meltzer has talked a lot about this match, and there's actually an episode of Colt Cabana's Pro Wrestling Fringe podcast where Meltzer and Cabana tell the story of this infamous Tom McGee match. So, should be interesting. Tomorrow night after Raw, check out the WWE Network for this special. The ROH Television Championship changed hands at Thursday night's War of the Worlds show here in Toronto as Shane Taylor defeated Jeff Cobb, Brody King, and Hirooki Goto in a four-corner survival match to win the TV title. We'll talk more about the card in Hour 2 with Dan the Mouth Avransky, who was there live. Well, Jonathan Good, the performer known as Dean Ambrose, has signed for a part in a movie. Earlier this week, it was reported that he joined the cast of the action movie Cage Fighter. Now, the film tells the story of an MMA champion who unexpectedly loses a heavily promoted match to a professional wrestling star making his crossover debut in MMA. He's humiliated by the defeat. He must fight his way back to the top and earn his place for a rematch. WWE's Christian, that's Jay Riso, is an executive producer on Cage Fighter, and also appearing in the film will be Anderson Silva, Georges St-Pierre, and Alexander Gustafsson. And finally, another former wrestler has turned mayor. I'm not talking about Glenn Jacobs, though there was that fun viral video this week where he threw on the cane mask and chokeslammed someone during a tourism speech. No. But former WWE and Impact star Matt Morgan has been named the new mayor of Longwood, Florida, after a vote by the Longwood City Commissioners. Hopefully he's gotten over that stutter he seemed to have a problem with for a while. Few MMA notes to wrap things up here. Nate Diaz will step back into the octagon for the first time in 3 years. He'll be fighting Anthony Pettis at UFC 241 on August the 17th. That is the same card as Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic in the main event. Now, for those of you that still care, Anderson Silva fought last night. Yep, he's still fighting. It was UFC 237, and he lost to Jordan Cannonier in the first round and may also have blown out his knee. The former Jack Swagger fought last night as well, and he won for his second time in as many fights. This was in Bellator, of course. He submitted TJ Jones with a head and arm choke in the first round, continuing his slow progression up the heavyweight food chain. And also in a post-match interview, fans booed Jake Hagar, Jack Swagger, and he played it up big time. I guess he's more of a heel there than he ever was in WWE. Good for Jake/Jack. We are going to take a break. When we come back, it is Triple Threat time. I will be joined by Jimmy Corderas and Todd Martin. And then later in the hour, don't forget, Ron Hutchison, still to come, the trainer of Edge, Christian Trish. He's got a new book out. We'll talk about it. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event.
But the mother and child is only a motion away.
Vape Nation Canada, your premier provider of electronic cigarettes and e-liquids in Southern Ontario. In downtown Burlington, corner of Elizabeth Street and Pine. In Stony Creek, at the corner of Paramount and Mud. In Brantford, at 320 Colborne Street West in the Sobeys Plaza. In Oakville, at Lakeshore Road West and Bronte Road. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 till 9, Sunday, 11 till 6. Better prices, selection, service, and atmosphere. Raise your expectations. You can have it all. Vape Nation, taking the vape shop experience to the next level. VapeNationCanada.com.
If you're a fan of Sunday night's main event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today. WrestlingObserver.com.
What if we had ourselves a wild card rule? I mean, we've had the superstar shakeup. That's tremendous. On top of that, what if I allowed three members of SmackDown to come to Raw on a given occasion? What if I invited three members of Raw to come to SmackDown? We would have ourselves a wild card rule. There's no telling what the hell would happen. I'm a genius.
It is Triple Threat time here on Sunday night's main event, and two of the regular Triple Threaters are back at it once again. A return engagement, first of all. He is the host of Aftermath on Sportsnet. One of the hosts, anyhow, Jimmy Corderas. Hello.
Good day, Jason.
And you're paired up again today, Jimmy, with one of your main foes and friends on this little thing that we do. From The Fix at Pro Wrestling Torch, Todd Martin. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Jason.
So, guys, the wild card rule is where we're going to start. We're going to start the show with you two guys chatting about this. To me, rather than jump all over with how scatterbrained I find this, I'm wondering if one of you can find a positive in the wild card scenario. I will throw it to perhaps Todd first. Todd, is there a positive of this wild card insanity?
I mean, sure. I think on balance, there's a lot of negatives out of this thing. The positive, if I have to frame it in the most positive light possible, is the fact that you now do add a little bit more talent to each show in terms of some of the top people. And given that ratings have not been good, that at least gives them a little bit more star power for each of the shows, which I think will offer some benefits leading into the fall. I think that's the upside that Vince got out of the thing.
Jimmy, is that a positive to you with more talent being on each show? Because I'm wondering if that'll become repetitive as well. That was one of the things that I liked about the brand split, is different talent on each show.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do like the idea of having talent specific to each brand. It gives each brand its own identity. But at the same time, as Todd pointed out, ratings haven't been exactly where they'd like them to be lately. And, you know, trying to find a positive in it, that's probably the only positive you can find right now, at least the one that sticks out the most, is that, yes, you can have some of your bigger stars kind of cross over and have some different rivalries on different brands and that sort of thing. But I agree with you also, Jason. It just seems so scatterbrained. It just, you know, all of a sudden here's Vincent Epiphany McMahon making the wild card thing. So I didn't like the way it was presented, but I will at least give it a shot and see how it goes from there.
Okay. I think that's pretty much all that we could ask for anyone that watches this on a regular basis, is giving it a shot. You know, you talked about the erratic behavior that is happening with Vince. And Todd, we've constantly heard about Vince changing scripts on Mondays and Tuesdays right up to being on camera. And now I'm watching him on Monday and I'm looking at the character of Mr. McMahon on camera, and he's just such a shell of what we used to see out there when it was the Attitude Era. And I know that's 25 years ago, but this to me really struck a chord with me, just going, Vince has not got to be on TV anymore, because I don't know if he knows what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was, I don't think he did a particularly good job in terms of as a television character on that show. But if you look at the television show, I mean, I think behind the scenes is clearly much more of an issue in terms of what's going on with Vince McMahon. If I can get a trade off of Vince McMahon being a regular television show, but he's not a regular television character, but he's not the one that's producing and booking the shows, I'd take that in a heartbeat over him not being on the television, but him being the one producing the shows. So yeah, not a great week for Vince in terms of in front of the camera. But as you alluded to, the big issue is behind the camera. I mean, this, as you mentioned, it comes across as erratic. The way that it was done came across as desperate. And the timing of the whole thing, even if you're going to do it, doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you wanted to build this thing up, it would make much more sense to do it in the fall, right as you're leaving onto Fox and you want to build that thing up. And then, moreover, the time when the whole idea behind having people on each show and why that should feel special and more important is the idea that each of the shows has a defined character, and seeing somebody on one show on the other show is special because you don't usually get to see them there. Mm-hmm. And the time when that means the least is right after you mix up the rosters. And they mixed up the rosters, and then they immediately did this thing. And then, so the appeal of Roman Reigns being on SmackDown or Raw doesn't have anywhere near the hook that it would have if you'd saved it off a little bit, because people have been used to him the last few weeks being on both shows. Same for the other characters.
You know, Todd, that really hit home with me when I watched SmackDown and I saw AJ Styles come out and say, "It's good to be back." Like, you've been gone for 2 weeks. Who cares? This means absolutely nothing. Now, Jimmy, going back to Vince here, I mean, you're, of course, someone who has been there, who has been behind the scenes. Going back to the years where WWE did have strong ratings, how did the day work in regards to changes being made? Did it always lead right up to all these changes being made right before you went on the air, or was there more structure to it at that time?
I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, even back in the day, there were instances where, you know, stuff wasn't finalized until like right before going to air or going to tape on SmackDown on Tuesday nights when we used to tape.
Right.
So in that regard, it's not much different. It just seems to be more prevalent today. There seems to be a lot, for lack of a better term, there seems to be a lot less confidence in going to air with what they've got. Like before, at least when they had a game plan, it was, okay, here's where we're going with this. Here's what we're going to do. Let's put it out there. And there would be some changes and some fine-tuning going into the show. But now it just seems to be, like you said, a little bit of scatterbrain going on. And it's kind of funny because you mentioned Vince. And I will go back to the Attitude Era because everybody talks about the Mr. McMahon character.
Yep.
Kind of evolved from everybody finding out that Vince was the actual guy in charge. And, you know, there was this perception that Vince was this evil behind-the-scenes boss and stuff like that. So he became that on television. I'm wondering if this is Vince now thinking, well, it worked back then. Everybody thinks I'm scatterbrained right now. Why don't I be that scatterbrained old man on TV? I don't know. Maybe he's thinking.
I don't know if I could say I wouldn't be surprised, but I guess, you know, of all the things in wrestling, Jimmy, I wouldn't be surprised. I just don't know if he has that amount of awareness right now that everyone does think he's so scattered brain to throw that character on. And it's, listen, from what we've seen, it's not a good choice at this point. Now, we go back to Todd here, and Todd, you know, one of the positive you did say was seeing these stars on both brands. And, you know, you can see both of the networks wanting the biggest stars on each brand. This week, though, what we saw was Kofi versus Daniel Bryan on Monday. And then on Tuesday, it's Kofi versus AJ versus Sami Zayn. It's two titles, two shows, 2 days, but one champion defending twice. Part of the reason why I said I like the brand spit was variety. I love Kofi, but to me, this was repetitive, and this was too much Kofi. Did you have that same feeling?
No, I actually didn't. I mean, I think there's definitely a generalized argument for you don't want to have people become too exposed. I think the person that's the biggest risk with moving forward, because there is some fan resentment from him in the past, is Roman Reigns.
Right.
With Kofi, I think in general, you want to avoid having people do too much, and any given does wear off, but in this case, we haven't been seeing Kofi on the show every week. The idea that you had a good title match on Monday, a really good on Tuesday with the same performer, that didn't bother me. I thought that was fine. I don't think you want to do that every week, but I thought on this week it worked.
One of the things that surprised me on Monday night was Daniel Bryan returning, Jimmy, and then immediately being thrown into the championship match on his first night back. This rematch was, you know, it was the WrestleMania rematch. There seemed to be zero hype to it. It seemed to be a waste. Did you come away with that?
I don't know if I would categorize it as a waste, but it is a missed opportunity, I think, where you could have promoted this, you know, have both guys on the show. That's fine. They show up on Monday night, but maybe promote the fact that tomorrow night on SmackDown is when we're going to get our rematch. But again, it's, you know me, I'm trying to be that glass half full guy, but it did kind of wreak a little bit of desperation.
And then Daniel Bryan on the SmackDown side of things. Now he's a team with Eric Rowan. I don't necessarily have issue with that if you want to keep those belts strong. The funny thing is even though the Usos had been such strong champions on the SmackDown side of things, them coming back, once again, the repetitive nature of they haven't been gone that long, but just the night before, and we have to talk about this, they're involved with the Usie Hot comedy angle. And I know they're the Usos, but it was so weird to watch them contending for a championship one night and then watch them in one of the worst segments of the year the night before. Todd, I don't even know where to begin on this. I mean, let's just talk about maybe get away from the Usie Hot. Let's go with the SmackDown titles. Did you like the way they were handed out with the Usos coming out for what seemed to kind of be no reason?
I mean, it wasn't ideal in the sense that I don't think a lot of people would expect that the Usos were going to win that match, given that they, you know, just moved over to Raw and they are called the SmackDown Tag Team titles. But they didn't have a lot of options. I mean, they have so few teams on that brand, and having Bryan and Rowan beat somebody is better than them being handed the belts without beating anyone. So that's a little bit better. I didn't like the scenario, but I think the larger problem is just that they don't have enough teams for two tag team divisions. I think they'd be better off in general if they just had one of each of the titles and then they had those crossing the brand. So you have one world champion, one tag team champion, one women's champion, et cetera. But specifically with the tag team titles, I don't think they really benefit from these mini divisions. And while I'm open to the idea in general of having a main event wrestler move into tag teams for a little while as just sort of a diversion. I worry that Brian in a feud with Heavy Machinery is going to define Brian down.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. Heavy Machinery, who maybe had some potential when they were on the NXT roster, but even still, they were comedic and just trounced when they came up to the main roster. I mean, let's talk about that. Here's Daniel Bryan. Here's someone that was just your champion up until WrestleMania. Jimmy, do you think that maybe with pulling Daniel Bryan out of the main event picture, that is a sense of WWE not having the confidence in him due to the whatever this mysterious injury was that he had once again?
No, I don't believe that's it. I think it's more along the lines of putting Daniel Bryan in the tag division with Rowan, in their mind, elevates the division. You know, you have a main event player in the tag team division, and that by default, I guess, that makes it more relevant. At the same time, as Todd pointed out, there's so few credible tag teams that it doesn't, right now, I don't think it matters who you put in that division. Look back when they had Ricochet teaming up with Aleister Black. To me, those are two singles competitors that could be stars on their own and just make no sense for me having them tag, even though they were a tag team in the Dusty Tournament. To me, that team didn't work. It was like, who was Felix and who was Oscar? That was an odd couple.
Yeah, no doubt. It was kind of awkward and maybe took away from the sense of prominence that they could have had coming in as individual stars if they had been pushed a little bit more rather than this random tag team. But having people on NXT being thrown up to the main roster randomly is not something that is foreign to WWE recently. Let's talk Money in the Bank. Let's promote it here because WWE really didn't seem to this week. You know, we're going into the two final shows and we're only 1 week away from that. The men's Money in the Bank is where we can start. I'm just looking for predictions from you guys. Todd, we'll start with you. It's, you know, Strowman, Ricochet, McIntyre, Corbin, Ali, Finn Balor, Andrade, and Randy Orton. Traditionally, the Money in the Bank has been the rocket ship, you know, attached to a person's back to skyrocket them to the top of the card. Let's do two things. Let's do who you think is going to win and who you think should win.
Jeez, I'm glad that you built up a little bit on the question there because I haven't given a second thought.
Isn't that weird that we're only a week away? And to me, it was so much on the back burner this week. I'm watching the WWE TV, and I couldn't believe how little emphasis there was on Money in the Bank and so much emphasis on this wild card thing. And I don't know if that's a reflection on WWE not caring about pay-per-view buy rates anymore because it's just on the network or what it is, but this has in the past been such an important, you know, replace King of the Ring as being so important to who they're going to push next. I don't care who wins this. I don't see a star coming out of this match. Is that just me?
No, I mean, in the last few years, they haven't used this as well to get over people. And I think it's also, as a concept, one that's been going on for a while now, and I don't think it has the same import that it did a number of years ago. With that said, I mean, I think it still can be an effective tool. And as far as the people in it, given that you've got baby faces on both shows, and I think it works best as an idea for a heel to have to use on a baby face at some point.
Yep.
I think, you know, you could do it either way. The people that are in the SmackDown side tend to be more sort of baby faces and smaller wrestlers. Which I think Vince is looking for sort of larger people to chase. So the guy that stands out the most, I guess, is Drew McIntyre on the Raw side. He's somebody that, to me, could fit with that belt and then use that to sort of hold over the head of Seth Rollins. So it feels like that would be a natural direction that they take, and I think one that would, you know, make sense.
Drew McIntyre is Todd's choice here. Jimmy, do you agree, or would you go a different direction?
I totally agree. He's the guy I predict to win it, and he's also the guy that I would, if it was me and my choice, that I would win it. He makes the most sense right now. He's just got it all. I mean, you look at everybody else, obviously, you know, Ricochet is going to be in there and he's going to do some phenomenal stuff because he's just a human video game. And it doesn't fit on anybody else. Like Todd said, it works better when a heel has it.
Yeah.
And definitely, and again, looking up and down the roster, the eight men there, he makes the most sense.
So on the women's side, and Jimmy, I'll have you go first here. It's Natalia, Dana Brooke, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Bayley, Mandy Rose, Ember Moon, Carmella. To me, I've said this about women's matches before. When I've looked at the roster of women in it and just gone, oh, how are they going to get through this? I hope they're going to pull out the miracle here, but there are some inexperienced performers in here that I worry about their safety in a match with a ladder where you're climbing, where you're doing stunts. If it is or is not a train wreck, we will find out. But who do you think is grabbing the Money in the Bank, Jimmy?
Again, going with the theory of the Money in the Bank briefcase works best when a heel is carrying it, my guess would be either Alexa Bliss or Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose would be an interesting one, but I think Alexa Bliss, with her mic skills, would carry that title, that briefcase a little better, because I think she can verbalize, you know, her position better, I think. So it would be between them two, but I think Mandy Rose would be an interesting one as well.
It's interesting. I mean, there's someone that we haven't seen all that much emphasis on right now because she has been paired with, you know, Sonya Deville for so long. So it, you know, when we talk about Money in the Bank being such a potential for breakout, I like that scenario where I think as Alexa Bliss has had a bit of a breakout already and, you know, she's had titles around her. Todd, what do you think for the women's?
Yeah, as you brought up, it's a rough group.
Yeah.
I think it may be a struggle in terms of the match. I agree with Jimmy as well. It seems to me that Alexa and Mandy probably would make the most sense. I'd prefer Alexa of those two. I don't see a lot in Mandy right now as an act, and Alexa at least is over in terms of crowd reactions and sort of carries herself as a star. So I guess I go with Alexa between those two. If I'm sort of thinking outside the box of other candidates, one that would jump out at me is Ember Moon.
Me too.
I think she's very good.
Yep.
And she's somebody that could use something to elevate her. So I could see that working as well.
The only struggle I'd see there, Todd, and as I've been very vocal about Ember Moon being vocal, I don't think she really understands her character, and I think she has a real, real problem with promos. And that, if anything, I'd actually like to see her be a silent character. Because I think it works with that mystique that you can build around her with this character. And I don't know about her talking the talk with this briefcase. That's my only reservation upon her winning.
I think her as a silent character makes a lot of sense. I think that's actually a great idea if they did that at some point. Well, I mean, I guess they sort of defined her a certain way. But yeah, I think that could work well with her.
We shall see. It is next week. We're going to be doing the post show here for it. But gentlemen, of course, you're going to be covering it on all of your medias as well. And where can people find you? First up, Todd.
I'm sure my Twitter handle is Todd Martin MMA. As you brought up, I do a weekly podcast with Ray Keller. It's called The Fix at pwtorch.com. That's a VIP show, so I'd encourage you to subscribe. But this week's show is actually available for free on the Wade Keller podcast feed. So if you check that out, you can get a sample there, both in terms of a Wednesday show where we talk all the news of the week, and then also on Friday we had a mailbag segment. So yeah, you can check that out there.
Nice. And Jimmy, people know they can see you on Aftermath, but where can they spar with you?
Well, sparring is quite frequent on my Twitter, which is at Jimmy Corderas. And if people just realize that it's all in good fun, we could all have fun. But yeah, you can tweet me there if you dare.
I love it. I just like watching the back and forth sometime. Todd, Jimmy, thanks very much for joining me, guys. Appreciate it. Let's do it again soon.
Sounds good. Jimmy.
Pleasure. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, my chat with Ron Hutchinson. He's got a new book out, and we're going to talk all about it. This is the man who trained Edge, Trish Stratus, Christian. The names go on and on. We'll talk all about it next right here as Sunday Night's Main Event continues. Stacey's mom has got it going on. She's
all I want, and I've waited for so long. Vape Nation Canada, your premier provider of electronic cigarettes and e-liquids in Southern Ontario. In downtown Burlington, corner of Elizabeth Street and Pine. In Stony Creek, at the corner of Paramount and Mudd. In Brantford, at 320 Colborne Street West in the Sobeys Plaza. In Oakville, at Lakeshore Road West and Bronte Road. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 till 9, Sunday, 11 till 6. Better prices, selection, service, and atmosphere. Raise your expectations. You can have it all. Vape Nation, taking the vape shop experience to the next level. VapeNationCanada.com. We'll be right back.
If you like wrestling, then your friends probably do too. And there's no better gift for a friend than a sweet wrestling t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com.
The Festival of Friendship!
From Ring of Honor, New Japan, and the Independents.
Super Kick!
To classic superstars like Shawn Michaels, Andre the Giant, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
The cream of the crop!
Find the perfect gift for the wrestling fan in your life at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing from Toronto, Canada, weighing 240 pounds, Ron Hutchison.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. Now, if I were to say the names to you, Edge, Christian, Trish Stratus, Beth Phoenix, Tracy Brooks, and Gail Kim, what do they all have in common? You may say they're Canadian. And I would say you're wrong, because Beth Phoenix is actually from New York. But she used to drive to Toronto, along with all of those other performers that I named, to train with a gentleman named Ron Hutchison. And he is my next guest here on the show because Ron, who I actually got to know about 20 years ago, and I just spoke about this with Gail Kim on the show. I did a TV shoot. Gail Kim was there. I was at Ron Hutchison's gym. And we did a segment for a TV show I used to be hosting. So since that time, I've met Ron here and there at different wrestling events and went to some of his cards way back in the day with the Apocalypse Wrestling Federation that he ran. Well, when I saw that he was putting out a book, I definitely wanted to talk to him about it because you do hear his name spoken of by many of those performers that I just talked about since he trained them all. So his new book is called Pain, Torture, Agony, and it's available from Crowbar Press. I started things off by asking, why write the book now?
Well, you know what? When I first broke in, I was going to school, and I used to go out to the East Coast, the Maritimes, with all these veteran guys like Sky Lolo, Stomp and Paul Peller, Ron Starr, Emile Dupree, and they always kidded with me that the young kid here, he's going to write a book, and that they thought that may have been my only reason to be there, but at that time I had no intention of writing a book, so about. Oh, my God. I guess it's sad to say, but it's about 5 years ago now.
Right.
Jan Murphy of the Kingston Whig Standard newspaper contacted me about writing a column on me, for his feature in the paper. And I said, you really think anybody wants to read about me? Oh, yeah, I think you've got an interesting story to tell. People will be interested. So I chatted with him, and he put the column, in the newspaper and online. He said, oh, my God, we got lots of hits to that story. I think at that time it was, one of their most read stories, not just the wrestling column, but on the newspaper site itself. He said, you should do a book. I said, Jan, I really don't have time to do a book. I'm busy and really had no interest in it. And he said to me, well, you know what? I'll write it.
Hmm.
I said, you know what? If I can get this book done by just chatting to you and you writing it, sure. Okay. I'll do it. So we agreed that we should, go forward with this. And I made the mistake of writing the first chapter for him.
Okay.
So you know where this is going.
Yep.
He said, oh, this is wonderful. Well, I ended up writing all I believe it's 22 chapters in length.
And you know, Ron, I mean, a lot of people have heard, if they haven't heard Ron Hutchison, they've at least heard Hutchie. And your nickname is so prominent when you speak with people like Edge, Christian, Trish, etc. So people maybe know your name more prominently because of those stars and hearing the stories about you as a trainer. The book itself, though, how much is it of your career as a wrestler versus your career as a trainer?
I'm going to say it's easily 50-50.
Okay.
It takes people through, my early days with the Bear Man up here, which is where I got my start. We go into the Maritimes. We got a chapter on my days in the World Wrestling Federation, which are coincidentally the same days I started training. I started training the first year that I become a pro wrestler, 1983. So
I've been training people for decades.
Now, you know, you talk about different talents that have come along and basically accentuating strengths, hiding weaknesses. And one of the really fun stories that you went through in your life and is documented in the book is about Adam Copeland, who would eventually become Edge in the WWE. He wrote an essay to win a contest and train with you for free. Can you just give me a bit of an outline of what actually happened here and what people can expect in the book about this story?
Well, first of all, before I go on with that, that essay in Adam Copeland's handwriting is printed in its entirely in the book.
That's awesome. Why did you keep it, Ron?
You know what? I kept a lot of things. I've got Gail Kim's application, and maybe I knew in my head that I would have this, a book in me. But I'd come across the Adam Copeland letter as I was scanning through. So here's an envelope with Adam's handwriting on it. Mm. And I opened it up, and my God, it was that long lost letter.
Wow.
And, so I thought this would be great to put in the book because everybody has wanted it for so long. So it is in this book. And I think even Adam's looking forward to see it again because I'm sure he's forgotten what he's wrote in it.
It's funny that he's written a book and he didn't have that letter for his book, but you have it.
He asked me, and I looked at the time, but I had so much. I've got cupboards full of wrestling stuff. None of it filed properly. It's like my VHS tapes, right? I've got stuff on it. I couldn't tell you what was on it because I didn't label them.
Right, right. I want to talk more about you training. I mean, you also used to run the Apocalypse Wrestling Federation here in Toronto. A couple weeks ago, I had Gail Kim on the show, and we talked about the time she was working with you, and she worked under a mask as the character La Felina. You, Ron Hutchinson, put the beautiful Gail Kim under a mask. This would have blown most promoters' minds. So tell me about this scenario.
Well, I've got, at risk of giving away what's in the book, I do have the reason for that in the book. And, quite simply, it was I didn't have a credible heel to work with Tracy Brooks.
Right.
So I needed somebody. Gail was a real quick learner. I would say, without a doubt, my whole tenure training wrestlers, she picked up things quicker than anybody else by far. So I generally try to keep my people an entire year with me before I let them have a match. She wasn't quite a year. She might have been 7 months or so off the top of my head. I'm not sure, but I know it wasn't the year. And I knew, she's ready. She can do it. But she's so beautiful. I don't want, it'd be hard to market her as a heel against Tracy, who was a big baby face for us. I had to put her under a mask, knowing full well that when we took that mask off her, which was the long-term plan, she would get over huge. So that's the reason that, I put her under a mask, and that's explained in detail in the book.
I was always hoping, Ron, just knowing that history and knowing you guys at that time, that at some point in Gail's career, La Felina would pop up, whether it be an Impact or WWE or just somewhere where we get a nice ode to people who knew her from the AWF.
Yeah, I think she hated the gimmick. She never did tell me, but I think I was in Vegas, so I didn't get a chance to listen to your interview with her. But I'm quite sure she didn't care. I think at first she did, because it gave her opportunity to wrestle.
Right, right.
But she probably thought the same thing, I'm sure, as time went on. What the hell,
Ron,
has she got me under this mask?
I tell you, she spoke, she understood. She looked back, and when we were talking, she understood, knew exactly what was happening. And, being someone who's been in the industry now for 20-something years, she gets it, of course.
Oh, I'm sure as she looks back, but I don't think at the time she did.
Oh, I see, at the time, right.
No, at the time, I'm sure she did.
Let's get some promo for the book out here. It's Pain, Torture, Agony. It's $19.95 at crowbarpress.com. But for all of our Canadian listeners, there's more to add here, correct?
That's right. It's $19.95 in the U.S. plus shipping. And that's in U.S. funds. However, I'm going to mail them Canadian orders out from Canada. And the postage here was less than half the price in Canadian funds of what it would have been in U.S. funds there. So the books are coming to me. The books will still be ordered off the Crowbar Press website. The information will be sent to me for Canadian orders. If they'd like the book signed, I'd be more than happy to sign it and shipped out from Canada in Canadian funds at half the rate, I think, that they would have paid if it had shipped from the States.
My thanks to Ron Hutchinson for taking time out to chat about his book. And once again, it's called Pain, Torture, Agony, and it's available at Crowbar Press. If you'd like to get a copy, it's $19.95. Visit crowbarpress.com. And Ron will even sign it for you. There's lots more of that interview and some fun stories about Gail Kim and Edge and Trish that we talked about. And if you want to get it, it's going to be available to patrons, and it will be up on the Patreon on Tuesday. I will pop it on up there. So check out patreon.com/SNMEradio. Taking a break back, second hour, and it's going to be Dave Meltzer on the way from Sunday night's main event.
You're torturing me.
Each week, the second hour of Sunday night's main event includes the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, Turnbuckle Trivia, and often the Triple Threat is in that hour as well. If you'd like to hear it, just scroll on over to patreon.com/SNMEradio. Become a patron, and the second hour is yours. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.